So I wanted to say something about stages three and four, and then hopefully there should be time for a good chunk of meditation practice afterwards at the end. So stage three of the 16th stage Anapanasati, one trains oneself mindful of the whole body I breathe in. One trains oneself mindful of the whole body I breathe out. So this stage is actually very akin to the third stage of the four stage mindfulness of breathing that we normally do. Perhaps it's slightly broader. So third stage is a normal four stage mindfulness breathing, aware of the whole breath. Well, the whole breath is the body breathing. It's the motion in the body, and it does permeate quite extensively. If you sort of remember the location sort of exploration from last week, if you sort of explore how far does this experience of the breath go, it will go right down into the abdomen, almost right down into the base, right out into the shoulders and arms. It's probably still a little bit there in the groundedness of the legs in contact with the mat, that's quite still, that's not affected by the breath. So there's a bit more there in the body. So we're going broad. So broad in relation to the breath means the whole body. It's a broad awareness. And that's our focus. So it's like there still is a focus, but the focus itself is quite open, it's quite broad. And there still is a breadth around that. But it's sort of in a way, yeah, so the focus is opening to this whole central area, the whole motion of body breathing. There's still a bit more in the physical experience. There's still sounds. There's still the whole play of the mind. And all of that's welcome in broad awareness. And the focus itself on the experience of the body breathing, it's itself, it's quite open, it's quite broad. But it is clear, it is in focus, it is sort of toned. And there's a sense of focus there, it's not slack. So this is a sort of quality of balanced effort. It's in relation to balance in the posture, it's also in relation to poise in the posture. And there's a sort of contact as well, there's this sort of contact of awareness with experience. And it's almost like there's a light pressure in that. Just a sort of visual aid, just enough to stay in contact, yeah, so not dropping away. And you'll find, if you sort of, I don't know, try and pick an object up and try this yourself, you'll find that if you just got a light contact, you do have a feel for the texture of a surface, and you have a sort of feel for the pliancy as well. And if you don't have as much as that, then you won't really feel it. If you have too hard a grip, you won't really feel it. But there's this sort of light pressure, this light contact, which is still toned, it's still focused. Okay, so it's an open focus, but it's still a focus. And then around that, we've got this broad awareness. Everything's allowed, and there's this sort of quality of inclusiveness. Yeah. So as the awareness deepens, then it naturally includes more and more, bringing it into a broad awareness, not pushing away, sort of much more open, sort of inclusive awareness. So now I want to say something about conditionality. You might remember this featuring last week in relation to bhavana, to the Anapanasati bhavana. It's a cultivation and development practice. And the way that works is through getting in touch with the conditioned nature of our experience and getting a feel for the to and fro from the play of conditions and consequences. Now, here in stage three, what we're translating is whole body. Actually, in Pali, it is kaya sankhara. So kaya is straightforwardly body. Now, sankhara is a word that you've probably come across in as a skanda, as one of the five skandas. So, how's it going, Arsush? No form, no feeling, thought of choice, consciousness itself. So if you remember the puja, you'll remember the five skandas. So in that context, sankhara means volition. And the key teaching of the Buddha in relation to Sankharas is the difference between feeling and volition. So sensation and feeling are just what's happening. They're not setting up future experience. They're not karmically formative. Volition is where karma begins. So intentionality, volition, conditions future experience. You're setting yourself up for suffering or for freedom from suffering in the future. So this is often translated as the, well, sometimes like the body conditioner or the conditioned body. You can sort of unpack it as seeing the body as something which is conditioned. It's something which conditions, and it's something that's kind of self-conditioning, if you see what I mean. So it's a play of conditions. It's affected by externals. It has an influence of its own, and in itself, it's a conditioned arising. So I think perhaps the basic point is we're not looking at a fixed object. We're looking at a flow of conditions and consequences. It's not static. It is conditioned. So in bringing to mind and attending to the Kaya Sankhara, we've got this clear focus, clear awareness of the conditions on which our experience is arising. So you start by just being really sensitive to what's there, and you find that what's there isn't a static object, it's this whole play of experiences. But you can also sort of get a feel for the way in which that's not arbitrary, it's actually arising. It's arising for, yeah, it's a conditioned arising. And I do think this really plays into this quality of bhavana, which we were drawing out last week, that if you can get a feel for the way in which you get the way in which your engagement with a practice conditions your experience of the practice, that's very key as well. So here, the Kaya Sankhara, well, one particular suggestion is that the breath conditions the body. So if the body's quite tight, then the breath will have a certain quality. If the breath is very relaxed, then the whole body around it will have that more relaxed quality. The in-breath can feel quite nourishing, quite enervating, quite life-giving. The out-breath can feel quite relaxing, relinquishing, letting go, moving into calm, into tranquility. So we're aware of both the physical body and the breath body and the relationship between them. Trying to get a sense of that conditioned relationship. And we'll notice as we relax into the practice that the breath will tend to lengthen, it will tend to become a bit shallower because we don't need as much oxygen to kind of pump the metabolism. But we're not controlling this. Okay. So there's a really key difference between conditioned and controlled. So everything is conditioned. Nothing's really controlled. You can't really control anything. And if you try and control your experience in meditation, you know, by willed effort, have a particular experience, it just doesn't work. But if you can find a way of feeling into the play of conditions and consequences, you know, the way you engage with the practice, the type of experience you have with the practice, how the practice goes, then that can be very effective. So here, in this stage, we're basically noticing the direct sensations we do experience and the quality of them, yeah, tension or relaxation, comfort, discomfort. So I wanted to say a bit next about returning from distraction to experience. So it's only relevant if you find that there is a pull and you find you're actually getting distracted. So if you find that actually, no, you're quite engaged, you're quite centered, you can just rest in that. If you find that there's a little bit of a pull, but I can kind of lean back and there's a sense of balanced effort, and if I do that and I kind of stay with it, then that's great. Then you just stay with that, and there's quality balance and there's quality focus. You might find that for some reason that doesn't work and you've got distracted, you know, so mind's pulled away, it's on something else. And so there's then the practice is about returning from distraction to experience. And the mistake I certainly made in the early years was doing that in a sort of controlling way. It's like, okay, I don't want to be thinking about that, I do want to be focusing on that, you know. And I found that quite ineffective. And reflecting on that, I think that sort of controlling attitude it's sort of got the hindrances built in, because it's kind of based on I don't want to be having this experience I'm calling distraction. I do want to be having this experience I'm imagining, which I'm calling absorption or concentration. So there's not wanting current experience, there's wanting a different experience. Okay, so there's aversion to what's happening, there's sense desire for what's not happening. So those two basic hindrances are kind of built into the whole approach. It's sort of why it just doesn't work. Okay, so what's the alternative? What can we do? The alternative is to turn towards the distraction. You turn towards the hindrance. If your mind is in hindrance, then that is where your meditation is at the moment. But what we're turning towards is the sort of felt experience that we're having at the moment, and what's probably most prominent is more the content of the thinking. Okay, so we're not particularly turning towards the content of thinking is not very helpful. If my mind is absorbed in some sort of an argument, trying to win the argument is not going to help. So that's what's called unwise attention. But those thoughts are going to have a feeling tone. Everything has a feeling tone. What's it actually like to be distracted in this way? How is it? You know, am I enjoying it? You know, or is it actually quite a difficult space to be in? So that's kind of coming back to feelings, and feelings sort of have a home in the body. Okay, so we often sort of, we might talk about having a lump in our throat, or got a gut feeling about something, or something that's tender in the heart, or there's perhaps a sort of damp moistness in the eyes or something. There's somewhere in the body, very often, where the feelings kind of have a home. And the other thing that we're kind of turning towards is the, I've called it volitional quality, so the intentionality behind the thought. Okay. So that's another thing we can kind of turn towards. What's the quality of the actual emotional content? Now, I often find that I can just kind of, it's sort of clear from what the thoughts are, what it's about, maybe even just on a rational level. So for the thinking types, if I find myself in the middle of an argument, it's going to be driven by ill will. You know, I'm trying to win the argument. If I find myself planning what I'm going to do next week, it might well be just an articulation of anxiety. I'm kind of worried, I'm trying to get the plan in place. If I find myself thinking about something I'd just much rather be doing than this, then that's desire. So what the intentionality behind the thinking is often, you know, you can often just see it, just work it out. But if you're more of a sort of feeling type, sensitive type, then the way in is more just to try and directly feel into, okay, what's the direction of my, what's the directionality of mind? How does that feel? What is the emotion that's underneath that? And often what's happening with the thought, the content of the thinking is often a way of kind of avoiding. You know, there's this sense of, oh, it's nothing to do with me, it's all his problem, you know. It's not that I'm angry, it's that he's horrible, you know. So that's a way of avoiding experience. Yeah? And it's quite understandable because, well, we avoid experience when that experience is painful or when you expect it to be difficult. So it may well be, well, aversion, you know, ill will in itself is a painful state of mind to be in. But it's also painful to kind of recognise that, well, sometimes I'm like that, you know, sometimes I get angry. That's not something that's easy to just kind of really accept and acknowledge and take on board. It's not, it doesn't fit in perhaps with my self-view. So there's, Yeah, so the surface content of thinking is probably a distraction from something that's quite uncomfortable to be with. But we do need to meet and acknowledge that discomfort. You know, it's not dreadful, we can be with it. And to make progress in meditation, we really do need to be prepared to be with our experience. And when our experience is an experience of hindrance, to make progress in meditation, we need to be prepared to actually be with that experience, the one that's actually happening. So again, those kind of emotions, those volitions, again, they'll have a home in the body. You know, we may well be able to experience them somewhere. So anger, there's probably a muscular tightness going on somewhere. And so coming back into the body is sort of coming back into embodied experience, and it's coming back into a place that's permeated by the movement of the breath. So we're actually coming back into that space that is the body breathing, which is our intended center of attention. So we're sort of coming back to the practice through doing that. And I guess also the practice in relation to hindrance is just being fully prepared to be with that, fully allowing that to be there in the broad awareness. And all we're doing is we're choosing a center of attention, which is the body breathing. And that might well be a center of attention that encompasses the expression of this whole difficulty. The expression, all the anxiety actually there, it's held in the body, right in the middle, in the core, in the torso, where the breathing's happening. So it's, in a way, it's not in a different place. So this is the stage three of the practice, the sort of fully embodied, the whole body, being really broad with the breath, opening to the whole body and everything it holds. And that can be a complete meditation in itself. Something that Tom was saying about the balance aspect of this meditation exercise we were doing just now, actually, that could be a whole practice in itself. Well, whole body awareness, So as a practice in itself, you might progress through a body scan, establish posture, check that the quality is there, open to a broad integrated awareness rooted in the overall experience of the body breathing, and then just settle into that, just relaxing into that. That can be a full practice. And as a practice, it can work quite well with a distracted mind, because there's something about the sort of definite sequence of a body scan that's just quite steady, can get you started. And then there's something about the sort of full physical experience that's quite grounding, and can allow you to just settle if your mind is quite dissipated. Okay, so that's stage three. And then stage four of the practice, one trains oneself calming the body I breathe in. One trains oneself calming the body I breathe out. So once we've established a posture and we've established a practice, we relax into it. So we may well be sort of relaxing with the out-breath. So there's the sort of physical side of it. If you remember this sort of exercise we've done on posture, there's a sort of quality of the physical experience. There's a sort of parallel quality in the mind. So in terms of relaxing, we're relaxing into the body, has a physical quality to it, and we're relaxing into the practice. But it's not something we're kind of doing, you know, it's not like a pump where you out breath you go. It's more you're kind of tuning in to the quality of relaxation in your experience. So the out breath can have this quality of letting go, of relaxing, of relinquishment. And you're tuning into that quality. It's sort of a quality in the breath physically, it's sort of a quality in the mind. And again, in the mind, you're sort of relaxing into the practice, into this preparedness to be with whatever experience is there. And this directionality of relaxation is the direction of towards absorption, direction towards absorption. So with the out breath, it can have this sort of relaxing, relinquishing, letting go sort of quality. So if you remember what the spiral path is, actually right up at the top, it's about relaxing, relinquishing, letting go. And you'll find later on in the Anapanasati, right at the end of the practice, the last three stages about fading away, cessation, relinquishment, relaxing, letting go. So this is the direction, it's the direction of the practice, the direction towards absorption. Conversely, you may find in the mind there's a sort of tightness, a holding on, an endeavour to control. That's the direction towards hindrance. So there are these two directions in the mind, and there are these two directions in conditionality. So the body is a conditioned experience, the mind is a conditioned experience. Conditionality has a sort of reactive or cyclical or trapped sort of direction to it, which in meditation is the direction of hindrance. And if you've got an experience of kind of tightness, holding on, defendedness, control, that's that direction of conditionality. Here it's the direction of hindrance, it's the direction of the cyclic nadanas, it's the direction of dukkha. There's also this direction which I'm sort of identifying here with letting go, relinquishment, relaxation, relaxing into the body, relaxing into the practice, and that's the direction of absorption. Yeah, it's the direction of absorption. And a lot of what we're trying to do in meditation is find our way. You know, we're trying to find our own way in meditation. And that's the way we're trying to find. It's just, there's a certain direction that the embodied mind has. So there's certain things which the body knows. It knows sort of where it is, but it also has a sense of direction. But when we're sort of really kind of getting in touch with the conditioned nature of our experience, you'll find actually there's a choice in there because there are two directions that it could go. So finding your way, finding that sense of direction, sort of making the choice. So we're making this simple choice to centre the attention on the chosen focus. Perhaps this is a more subtle choice we're also making. We're kind of, when we find that choice, and each moment has got that moment of choice in it, we're sort of choosing the direction of absorption, the direction that the practice is intended to go in. Okay. So, calming is a fruit of our practice, returning from distraction to experience, returning from ideas to direct experience, kind of has a calming effect. There's a return to embodied experience. So we might be, when we're in the content of our thinking, it's quite disembodied. When we come back into the body, that's got a calming effect as well. And this sort of preparedness to inhabit our body, inhabit our physical experience, relax into it. I mean, that can really key into a quality of Shraddha, which can sort of grow with experience of practice. If you kind of got experience of the way in which coming home to the body, coming home to embodied experience, has this calming effect, has this kind of quality of moving you towards absorption, then you can kind of have confidence in that, you can kind of have faith in that, and then the preparedness to do it when it's difficult is more available. Yeah. So one last point about metta, we're sort of turning towards, perhaps particularly in relation to turning towards resistance, as a sort of being prepared to be with, but it's being prepared to be with kindness. So it's a practice of self-metta, what in other contexts I've called sort of finding that place of love from which you can be with your experience, that place of self-metta that's prepared to just really accept that this is how it is at the moment, just really be with that. And that quality of metta, it's got a quality of being patient with whatever's difficult, with whatever's painful, and just of really enjoying whatever's supportive, whatever's positive. So metta is very, in a way, a key quality to bring to mindfulness, and mindfulness is a key quality to bring to metta. So the two practices go together. They're both samatha practices. Samatha, you might describe as calm abiding, and it's this kind of interfusion of metta and mindfulness. So in the mindfulness of breathing, in the Anapanasati, we're sort of bringing this kindness and self-metta into our experience, into our preparedness to be with experience, with that quality. And in the metta, we're bringing centeredness, we're bringing balance, we're bringing breath and focus, we're bringing these qualities of mindfulness to bear when we're practicing metta bhavana as well. And as we do that, we're sort of drawing on the sort of natural sensitivity of awareness, and we're practicing it. We're sort of being sensitive. It's kind of drawing on sensitivity, but it's also cultivating sensitivity. And sensitivity is a key quality of awareness. Awareness is mindfulness, really. So that's the way in. And when our experience is difficult, being sensitive to that can feel very raw. But that rawness is a quality of sensitivity, and that sensitivity is a dimension of awareness. So that's actually the practice. So if we can get to that point, that raw point of really being prepared to be with a difficult experience, that's where we